This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, are the United States and China paving the way for an era of instability and confrontation after decades of engagement? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. During his campaign for the presidency, then Republican candidate Donald Trump ran on his opposition to illegal immigration and what he considered Washington's feckless policy toward China. Notwithstanding this criticism, once he assumed office in 2017, President Trump declared that he would withdraw the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, what former President Barack Obama and many Republican and Democratic lawmakers, as well as trade analysts, considered a critical arrow in the quiver of thwarting Beijing's unfair trading practices, theft of intellectual property, and aggressive moves in the Southeast Asian region. In 2018, in a bid to pressure China into stopping its theft of intellectual property, President Trump began imposing tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum, tariffs which then expanded to farm products, leading to a tit-for-tat dispute between the two superpowers, which has yet to be fully resolved. By January 2020, Mr. Trump first praised, then denounced Chinese President Xi Jinping for his handling of the coronavirus pandemic. China initially suppressed or delayed sharing critical data about the virus with the World Health Organization. Beijing also engaged in a disinformation campaign about the origins of the virus, falsely blaming it on the United States. China also reveled in mocking the EU and US response to the pandemic, even though China deceived its own citizens and attacked anyone, including scientists, who dared question the government's handling of the pandemic, which was far from perfect. So from the U.S.-China trade war, Beijing's crackdown on Hong Kong democracy protests, and the controversy surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, to Beijing's passage of a draconian national security law in Hong Kong and its aggressive moves in the South China Sea and on its border with India, China has been baiting the West and Washington in particular. On Tuesday, July 21st, Washington ordered China to close its consulate in Houston, Texas. In remarks a few days later at the Nixon Foundation in Yorba Linda, California, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the United States took this action to, quote, protect American intellectual property and Americans' private information, closed quote. On Friday, July 24th, Beijing reciprocated by closing the U.S. consulate in the southwestern city of Chengdu. We're joining us to discuss the causes for and implications of increasing tensions between the United States and China are two distinguished analysts. Chris Walker is Vice President for Studies and Analysis at the National Endowment for Democracy here in Washington, and Zachary Hosford. He's Deputy Director of the Asia Program at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing in this age of the coronavirus pandemic. Chris Walker, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Carol. Thank you.
And Zachary Hosford, welcome to you.
Thank you, Carol. It's nice to be here.
First to you, Chris Walker, how do you assess the current threat posed by China to not only the United States, but to other democracies around the world?
Well, I think in your introduction, Carol, you alluded to a whole host of challenges that are before our eyes today. And I think it's so important to stress that many of these challenges have been years in the making. And I would contend that the engagement we've pursued with China has largely been unconditional, or at least principally focused on economics and business. And I think one of the lessons we're learning is that as China has invested so much abroad in other domains, including the educational sphere, the media sphere, the cultural sphere, the technological sphere, we're only now recognizing the downside to this engagement, where we didn't put meaningful accountability and, frankly, democratic principles front and center in our engagement with China over now a period of more than a quarter century. And in a way, we're playing catch up to figure out how both to not entirely lose the economic benefits and the benefits that can accrue from integration and interaction, but being very purposeful in defending democratic principles. And this isn't only a question for the United States, which is in the throes of a very difficult struggle to meet the right balance in that regard. But as you suggested, this is something, given the very extensive global reach of China today, it's really a question for all countries and all democracies around the world. And we are slowly starting to get our bearings to understand the scope of the challenge and in turn develop the sort of responses that can be effective and appropriately suited to what we face.
Turning to you, Zachary Hosford, for your response to how you characterize the current threat posed by China to the United States and other democracies around the world.
Yeah, I agree a lot with what Chris said there. Obviously, we've undergone quite a transformation in our thinking in this country about China, its role in the world stage, the implications it has on the development and the very construct of the international system. So in many ways, there are a whole host of challenges that come from the multitude of Chinese Communist Party policies here that we are only starting to grapple with. In a way, you can argue we're a little bit too late, but there really is still time for us to organize behind the interests and values that we hold dear, that we care greatly about, where we do find these challenges with the Chinese government, and to push strongly for a set of American policies that defend our interests and those of our allies, because it really is the challenge of the coming decades. So we've seen some of this greater appreciation of the challenges. In some ways, there may be specific threats. In other areas, I wouldn't call them threats to the United States necessarily, but certainly there are policies that the Chinese government has been pursuing that absolutely undermine a lot of the values and freedoms that we as Americans deeply care about.
Back to you, Chris Walker. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my impression that the United States and maybe other democracies thought that by opening up economically or engaging with China, that somehow that could affect its political system, that perhaps China would open up as a result of opening its economy. And we have not seen that, particularly under Xi Jinping.
Well, this was the dominant assumption coming out of the Cold War era and at the outset of the reform process started in China. And I think you have it exactly right. In a sense, this dominant assumption has been challenged. There was a feeling that by integrating China economically and as well as into key global institutions, that this would slowly but inexorably lead to political liberalization and liberalization of China's media system and so forth. If anything, over time, and especially during the period in which Xi Jinping has assumed paramount leadership, China's actually become more repressive. And that's happened at the same time that China has become far more engaged and assertive internationally. And I think what we're seeing is that the character of the domestic governance in China is expressing itself beyond China's borders. And so today, when China uses the tools of influence it has, it isn't simply to, in my view, win hearts and minds or otherwise attract and persuade. It does something else. And I think this, too, is something we need to reflect on very seriously as we defend values of liberal democracy, free expression, which are under such severe threat in places like Hong Kong and elsewhere. This is really a very loud alarm that's being sounded, I think, for all of us to defend these key principles and values.
Turning to you, Zachary Hosford, I guess the next question is, do you think that the United States, whether under Obama, but particularly under Trump, who is very fixated on the trade deficit and trying to get the trade deficit balanced and then ignited this trade war, do you think that that is too narrow of an approach and perhaps not even the most effective one? Many harken back to, as I did in my introduction, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was albeit more about an economic trade deal, but it was one that would have excluded China and could have perhaps cornered it and forced it to follow the rules of international trade. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the economic component is absolutely critical here. Part of the reason that I think we were so wrong in trying to project the direction of China's opening and liberalization was because we didn't expect in many ways for it to become as economically powerful as it has. We used to talk about whether China's economy was going to go through a hard landing or a soft landing, but no one talks about that these days because I think everyone has understood the fact that the model the Chinese government has been pursuing has worked, which is, to Chris's point, has helped facilitate this further repression because, unfortunately, there's quite a lot of influence and power that can be wielded with this growing economic might. So to your point, Carol, what do we do about it? The Trans-Pacific Partnership may not have been perfect, but I think the strategic rationale was sound. Ultimately, we as the United States need to stand up for the system that we want to see. We want to help other countries around the world increase their participation, their standards in trade agreements, increase their labor rights and adherence to environmental standards. So those are the kinds of things that the United States should be doing to really try to build this big tent and broad coalition of countries that stand for a certain set of values. The previous administration was always very clear that if China could reach those levels, that they would be welcome as well to join. But that's not something the United States should wait for. Unfortunately, we have given up the opportunity to really make inroads when we abandon that push. So maybe there will be maybe not quite the same opportunity again, but we really need to double down on our efforts to create this common vision with countries around the world about what kind of rules of the road we want.
And Carol, if I could maybe add to this, I think you touched on something that's terribly important, which is China over so many years has engaged on a global effort that's multidimensional. So it's operating in the economic realm, the military realm, the diplomatic realm, and in other spheres. I think the response we are marshaling now is necessary, but it's insufficient. And I'll just give some examples. I think the degree to which China has invested in its outward-facing media and information efforts, both through the things that are most visible, like its state media, CGTN, Xinhua, and other such outlets, is just one piece of a very extraordinary and extensive outreach. During the same time, the United States and other democracies have been pruning back their efforts in those spheres. And this is over a period of many, many years, predating the current administration. And I think when we think about everything from outward-facing media, the projection of independent media coming from open societies, people-to-people exchanges, which China has scaled up dramatically around the world, including throughout Latin America and sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere, we have not kept pace for one reason or another. But I think we've done that to our great detriment, because today building allies and building networks and finding natural allies is so critical to any country's success.
We'll have more in just a moment. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Chris Walker, from whom you just heard. He's Vice President for Studies and Analysis at the National Endowment for Democracy, and Zachary Hosford. He's Deputy Director of the Asia Program at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Both are based in Washington, and we're discussing the implications of rising tensions between the United States and China. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook. And here's just a big shout out to all our loyal listeners in East Asia, from China to Hong Kong to Vietnam and all countries in between. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So back to our program, and over to you, Zach Hosford. I'd like to get a quick response from both of you with respect to recent actions the Trump administration has taken. First, of course, Secretary of State Pompeo's speech in Yorba Linda, California, really a total antithesis of the Nixon approach, saying, you know, we really have to ratchet up pressure on China, and the closing, obviously, of the Chinese consulate in Houston, and that triggered the reciprocal move by China, closing the U.S. consulate in Chengdu. What do you make of those moves? How significant are they? Are they wise?
There's been a lot of activity from the administration rhetorically on China, and you mentioned some of those examples. In some cases, there are legitimate reasons. On the consulate issue, there may be legitimate reasons there for closing the Chinese consulate in Houston. But this is actually part of a broader orientation of the Trump administration. You mentioned Secretary Pompeo's speech, which is one in a series of much tougher speeches that cabinet officials have given on China in the past couple of months. And I really think that while it's appropriate for us to really marshal U.S. resources to take a firmer stance in support of our interests and values, there are a couple of problems with the way the administration is going about it. Number one, we're moving quickly to that area where we're going beyond criticizing specific policies and communicating clearly why those policies are not in our interests and what we should do about them, but rather getting into very close into the territory of xenophobia, very strong anti-China language. And we run a significant risk of going much too far and getting beyond the specific policy issues that we want to address. The other issue that I find is, on the one hand, you might have Secretary Pompeo or other cabinet officials make statements about how the United States is addressing certain policy issues, but we also have information about things that President Trump has done that are diametrically opposed to those rhetorical statements. So, for example, if Secretary Pompeo is talking about how severe the crimes are that the Chinese Communist Party is committing with its internment in concentration camps of Uyghurs and other Central Asian ethnic minorities, but at the same time, we hear that President Trump has told Xi Jinping that that's the right thing to do, or given a green light to crack down on freedoms and democracy in Hong Kong, the gap between the rhetoric and those actions are not lost on our allies, on China, on potential adversaries and others around the world, which really creates a problem for our China policy.
That's a very good point. Over to you, Chris Walker. Zach talked about our allies. Once again, we can't really do it alone. We can't have an effective policy to counter China's nefarious activities, anti-democratic actions, whether vis-a-vis the Uyghur population, vis-a-vis Hong Kong, this horrible crackdown and the imposition of this national security law. We can't really do it effectively without allies. And yet we're asking them to help, but we're not providing incentives for them to do so. What's your take on these recent moves? And to what extent are they maybe more political within the context of the presidential election campaign for Mr. Trump to appear to be tough on China? I wonder to what extent that factor is applicable.
So I think the issue of allies, I'll touch on, there are a number of reasons why this is so critical. One of them is that the scope of the challenge that's presented by China at the moment, it's global, as I noted, it's multifaceted, really requires cooperation and allied action in response. We're seeing some of this with a number of countries that have been at the leading edge of this response, including countries like Australia, that has both responded in geopolitical terms, but also has gone through and continues to go through an incredibly painful and difficult process to properly respond to the enormous challenges that have been wrought upon the country by China's activity that's really been anti-democratic in nature. And so this has been chronicled by incredibly courageous and thoughtful experts like John Garneau, John Fitzgerald, Clive Hamilton, and others who've looked at what's been going on in the university sector, in the research sector, in the political realm. And I think it speaks to the need for allies, democracies, natural allies, to learn from each other. I think some of that's happening. Surely more can happen, but also to provide solidarity and collective action in response to these problems. China, Russia, and other authoritarian regimes thrive on divide and conquer methods, both at home, where they brook no dissent and they prevent any sort of open pluralistic debate within their own borders. That's their stock and trade. But they try to apply these same methods overseas to the extent the local environment will permit it. And I think what we're learning is within Europe, within the transatlantic community, to the extent we don't have unity and we don't have an approach that both signals at a political level to China that we're serious and disciplined in our response, but also at a substantive level as we learn what it's going to take to make sure we can maintain the integrity of our universities, our media sectors, our technology sectors. This cannot be done on any single country's own. Even a country as large and powerful and resource-rich as the United States, we do ourselves a disservice when we don't work cooperatively with our natural allies. And I think this administration has been very good at focusing on the problem and putting it on the agenda. And so there's no dispute about the scale of the problem. I think the next step in the response needs to be more effective cooperation with all of our natural allies.
In the few minutes we have left, let me go to you, Zach Hosford, to ask what you would advise the next administration, whether it's a continuation of the Trump administration or perhaps a Biden administration. What types of steps would you advise that the United States take toward China in conjunction with its allies, something that the Trump administration doesn't seem inclined to do, which, as both of you have said, is detrimental? What are some concrete steps that you'd like to see to truly counter China's nefarious actions?
Yeah, you said it very well, Carol, a couple of minutes ago when you mentioned that the United States can't go it alone. So I am a firm believer that the United States, under any administration, has to put its allies first and foremost as it tries to execute its foreign policy and national security policy. And there are a lot of ways that we can do that in the future. They're not all directly related to China because, you know, some of the things that we've been seeing over the past weeks and months in how the administration has been dealing with our allies makes a great deal of importance in this as well. Because, for example, we just heard about the U.S. looking to pull 12,000 troops from Germany. Our German allies were not consulted on this ahead of time. Actions like that make it much more difficult for us to then meet with the Germans to try to craft an approach that better stands up for shared values, be it on freedom of speech or assembly or other rights or the promotion of democracy, when we've treated them a certain way. A similar thing can be said about our South Korean allies, again, asking for five times as much in host nation support has really, at a time when we really should be strengthening our alliances, helped drive a wedge, which is exactly what China hopes to achieve between the United States and its extensive alliance system. So really, a new approach, you know, whether it's under a Biden administration or another Trump administration, we really have to focus on what are the key interests and values we want to support and how are we going to our allies first to craft policies with them, in conjunction with them, instead of looking at countries as competitors in how much are they spending on their defense budget compared to us, but rather as partners, as like-minded countries, really who can have a multiplying effect on the types of outcomes we're trying to achieve going forward over the coming years and decades.
So you get the last word, Chris Walker.
So I think we have to be mindful not to let the day-to-day news cycle cloud our vision and our thinking. China has been making investments in all of the sectors we've discussed for many years now, and they've grown roots in open societies which welcome this kind of interaction, whether we're talking about in the media sphere, the educational sphere, or elsewhere. I think the response needs to be grounded and long-term. I think the good news is that today we have a much better understanding and much better information in the public domain about the nature and scope of the challenge. An authoritarian determination to monopolize ideas, suppress alternative narratives, and often to exploit partner institutions. This actually cuts right to the heart of open debate and democratic integrity, but that's the democracy's competitive advantage. Our advantage is being open, transparent, encouraging pluralism of ideas and thought, and that's what the autocrats fear most.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Chris Walker, Vice President for Studies and Analysis at the National Endowment for Democracy, and Zachary Hosford, Deputy Director of the Asia Program at the German Marshall Fund. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.